They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
Welcome back to episode 5 of Michigan's Missing Angels with the Underestimated Podcast. In today's episode, we talked to a police officer, Kenneth Robinson, one of the officers who is actively working on Kim's case. As we asked him questions, we learned more about who Arthur was as a person. He also gave us key details and information that we did not know about Arthur before, and all the young girls that have a chance of being his victims. But we haven't talked about his behavior. What kind of person was Reem? Before we dive deeper into this unsolved case, we want to give a very special thank you to Officer Robinson for taking the time to answer our questions and help us advance into this case. We deeply appreciate him.
All right, my name is Detective Kenneth Robinson with the Canton Police Department. I've been with the Canton Police Department for 23 years. I've been a detective for 13 years. Actually, I was first assigned this case back in 2006 when a family member, Kim Laro, came to the department and asked us to reopen up this case, her runaway case, and look into it further. I worked on the case probably for about a year or two before I was reassigned for a few years. And then in 2024, I came back to the Detective Bureau, and at that time, our Detective Lieutenant wanted to reopen the case again, and I was also reassigned to it a second time.
If you can tell us anything about him, what do you know about Arthur Reem that you can, like, tell us?
What I know about him?
Yeah.
So Arthur Reem's, he recently passed away last year in prison. I have interviewed Arthur on two separate occasions and talked to him. He is or was serving a life sentence for one murder that happened in East Point. And he was, I don't know if you want to say a suspect or someone who just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time for several other disappearances of young ladies that occurred back in the early 80s through early 90s until he was actually arrested on the charge that he went to prison for. Arthur never, like I said, I interviewed him on a couple occasions. He never admitted to anything. He did make a comment at one point saying that if he was ever charged with the Kim Laro case, he would not fight it and plead no contest to it. But he would never admitted to actually murdering or even coming in contact with Kim Laro.
Well, to kind of go along with that, can you kind of like talk about what he was like when you interviewed him?
Art is, so the thing about Art, he's the kind of person who definitely thought he was smarter than everybody else. He liked the game of being involved in stuff. So he would like to, he would give you a little bit of information and then he would like try to pull it away. It was a big chess game talking with him. And he liked to give enough that people would come back. He liked the attention of it, I guess. He'd been interviewed by multiple different agencies, by the FBI. You know, a lot of different people tried to talk to him about different cases. So he liked the attention he got from it. He would like to play the games of giving a little bit and trying to take away, then, you know, not talking at all. He would want to try to negotiate things to benefit his position. So it was definitely a big chess match when you're talking with him. So, I mean, that was pretty much it. He's definitely a unique individual.
What evidence do you have that makes you think that it was Art who took Kim and or the other girls?
Well, the unfortunate thing, there is no actual evidence. Like I said, he was either, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence. He just seemed to be in those areas when people turned up missing, which is obviously very suspicious that one person happens to be at five or six different locations where, or in the area of five or six different locations where someone just happened to go missing at that time frame.
He had done that before.
Exactly. So he had been charged with a sexual assault case where he did pick up an individual and his, I think it was nephew, and they did sexually.
In the cabin, yeah.
Yeah, and they sexually assaulted her. And then very similar with the girl that he did kill, you know, he kind of lured her to his warehouse where he, you know, ended up killing her as well. And she was his son's girlfriend at the time. So unfortunately, I was not part of it when they searched for it at the warehouse. They did find several items from that time frame that they thought were obviously suspicious. They did find a room that was designed that was basically soundproofed and things like that, so that a place where he could take someone to do things to him without anybody knowing. But again, unfortunately, there was so much time had passed, and the warehouse was in very poor condition, like a lot of water damage and things along those lines that had destroyed a lot of possible evidence that might have been able to be obtained if they would have looked in that area sooner.
Any new evidence on her case?
Unfortunately, we have not. We've explored several different theories are out there, and unfortunately, it seems like in that time frame, there's actually several different people that I guess could be classified almost as serial killers or people who were doing things similar to that in that era. And that was just a different time where people were more free, people hitchhiked, people moved around more freely, you know, and then obviously we didn't have the things that we have now with cell phones and things like that where we can track and see people's whereabouts more easily. So there are several different people that I guess are possibilities as well. You know, it's just hard to say. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is her body's never been found. So that also, you know, presents a huge obstacle, you know, not having a body. So, and kind of leaves us with just theories and so far nothing, you know, with any type of evidence.
Do you know anything about, like, Lucy Lero and her relationship at the time, or, like, more specifically, her boyfriend?
That's always been the interesting thing with Lucy. When I got involved in the case, we did attempt to interview her. She has also since passed away, I think last year or a year before. She was never cooperative, which I guess was always interesting. I think most people would think a natural reaction, if your daughter was missing, you'd be more than cooperative. Law enforcement or whoever trying to locate her, you know. So that was always a huge, I guess, question or red flag for me and also the other investigators who worked on this case. I mean, Lucy had several different boyfriends. The one that people seem to think was involved, I think we've done some research into that, and we found that he most likely was not involved in anything. You know, I do believe it was just a random encounter that Kim had, whether it was Art Reams or someone else. Unfortunately, that's probably what happened.
Do you think Art Ream did kill anybody else personally from you? What do you think?
I mean, my personal opinion, I definitely think he did. You know, that's just an opinion. So that's not evidentiary at all and no way to prove that he did. But it's just like a lot of circumstantial things that happened around him that would lead to believe that he could have been involved in several other murders.
If he did kill anybody else, do you think he, like, could have or would have lied about where they were buried?
Oh, absolutely. He definitely would have lied or let on different things. Like I said,
the games, like with the map.
Like I said, he loved the attention. He loved to play the game. He liked to think he was smarter than you know, the investigators that would come out and talk to him. So, like I said, it was a big chess match for him, you know, to play these games with people. So, I do believe he would not tell anyone. I don't think he, you know, we were kind of hoping maybe when the last time we interviewed him, I guess, he was in very poor health. So we were kind of hoping maybe on his, you know, deathbed, he might give like a final, hey, this is actually what happened. We were hoping for a call from the prison. Unfortunately, that didn't happen because we were hoping once we got that word that he was kind of close to the end, we'd try to go talk to him one last time. But unfortunately, somehow that fell through the cracks and we didn't get that notification after he passed.
Do you think Kim could have been a victim of the Oakland County child killer also, or just Arthur?
I don't think that she could have been a victim of the Oakland County child killer. That seemed to be more directed towards boys. I don't think, and that was also operated in an area not close to where Kim disappeared from. So, I believe it could have been Art, but it could have been several other people that were in the Metro Detroit area doing things, unfortunately, similar to that in that time frame. But yeah, I don't think she had anything to do with the Oakland County cases.
If you can you go into more depth about Kim's family and what
regular life was like?
Yeah, regular life.
If you know.
From what we've learned, Kim had a sister and a brother, an older sister and a younger brother. Her parents were divorced. Her father lived down in the Monroe area, and Kim lived with her mom here in Canton. Kim appeared to, what the reports say, is kind of a troubled youth, got herself in a lot of trouble, would run away a lot, had different disciplinary issues with her mom, and had run away to Florida a few months before this happened. She was located down there at her grandma's house and brought back. Then she was not getting along with her mom, so she went to go stay with her dad down in the Monroe area for most of that year, and she had actually just returned to Canton a couple weeks prior to her disappearance. So she'd only been back in Canton, I think, a week or so before she disappeared.
Have any other leads or personal leads that you may think have done it?
Again, through the last year or so, when we looked at it, we found several other people that were fortunately doing things similar during that time frame who were also in this area at that time frame. So the hard part is a lot of these people are deceased now, you know, and there's not a lot of evidence to point towards anyone either. So it's kind of hard to walk in and, you know, hope they're just going to blindly admit to, you know, killing them if you don't have any information to kind of corner them into, you know, trying to make a statement. And if they're already doing life in prison, they're, you know, you don't have much bargaining chips to get them to open up to you and speak to you and give you information. So it's very difficult. Again, without having a body, you know, maybe some type of DNA evidence that you could link to somebody, we're really at a disadvantage trying to find the answers.
Do you know anything about Art's family?
Not a lot. I know he had a son. He was married at one time. His son
on and off all the time.
Yeah.
His son died in a drunk driving accident. So he was deceased. I don't know much more about his family other than that.
Is there like anything about Kim or her family, kind of anything like around that, or like her friendships or anything like that, that you know that not many other people know?
I mean, we've talked to several people who knew her, during that time frame. They said, unfortunately, that year she had spent most of her time down in the Monroe area, and a lot of that family had since is deceased or we've been unable to locate. So it was hard to get much information about her family life or what was going on in her life down in the Monroe area. But since she was only back in Canton for a very short time before she disappeared, not a lot of real useful information from friends and family at that time, you know, just because she was, you know, 14 years old and things change rapidly in a young person's life at that age. Yeah, nothing that would have pointed in a direction or something that would have helped us in this investigation.
What was the most challenging part investigating this case?
The whole thing.
Yeah.
you're dealing off of, unfortunately, we're dealing off a theory that, I mean, obviously we believe she was killed or deceased. We've taken the steps to see if for some reason she just ran away and started a new identity, which I guess is possible, probably very unlikely. You know, there's no record of social security number, no record of, you know, anything like that. So, you know, her fingerprints, dental records, all that have been submitted to all the national databases. So if, you know, if she went to get a job or something, it was fingerprinted for some reason or different things. So, you know, those checks and balances were done, but not to say that that's still not a possibility. But again, without a body, that really makes it hard to find out, you know, what happened, what, you know, a cause of death, or, you know, giving us information and a direction of where to go. Other than that, you're just kind of, you know, reaching at straws. And unfortunately, with, you know, a 40-year time difference or time delay, I mean, again, a lot of the people that were around then, you know, are forgotten things or hard to find. Their names have changed. They moved away. They're deceased. You know, it's hard to get useful information from people, you know, with that large of a time gap, you know. And plus, I mean, we don't have the technology footprints now that we have now that we didn't have then. So again, you're at a disadvantage not being able to, you know, information you get is very limited. And so you're really reaching at straws and trying to put pieces together without a lot of information. So
do you, like, know anything specifically about her sister? And was the possibility that she kind of, like, could have been, like, running away back to her dad's in Monroe? Was that possibility ever looked at?
Yeah, that was obviously a possibility. Unlikely, since she'd just come from there.
Yeah.
Her bigger, you know, group of friends and family, and it seemed like at her dad's house she had rules, her mom's house she didn't have rules. So I think she, and I guess, I mean, just a thought would probably be she'd rather be at her mom's house where she had more freedom to do what she wanted instead of her dad's house where she was watched more carefully. He lived on a farm, so he was out in the country, versus, you know, being in the city where you can get around and go places and your friends are a couple blocks away, not, you know, miles away, living in a country setting. So I would doubt she was trying to get back to the Monroe area.
Then was there any other information you had about her sister?
I mean, we've talked to her sister on several occasions. She's been very helpful throughout the investigation. She's always willing to help out whenever she could. You know, unfortunately, she was older. She wasn't living at home anymore. You know, so she also had kind of limited, she wasn't really around during these days that led up to Kim's disappearance.
Are you aware of any other contacts we could reach out to?
None that I could share or give out.
Yeah, that's completely understandable.
Yeah.
Are there any questions or things that we are able to know that we didn't ask that you want to share if you have it? Yeah.
I mean, like I said, it's a very unfortunate circumstances and an unfortunate case, you know, and from that time frame to where we are today, you know, unfortunately there wasn't the technology things that we have now back then that would have probably helped this case along back then. you know, cell phones and things like that would have obviously been a huge benefit to, I mean, we use them every day when we try to locate people that are missing now or people that run away. You know, people don't seem to be able to go without a phone. They got to have it with them all the time, so they're easy to track. Social media and all that stuff that, you know, you have now, people want to post things, especially young people. So you're much able, have much better chances of success now than they did back in those days. And again, you know, the hugest disadvantage too was just the time that had passed since we tried to, since we've reopened the case. With that much time passed, it just puts us at a huge disadvantage to try to figure things out. And again, we're just grasping at theories. And unfortunately, we don't have any real hard evidence of anything pointing us in any direction. Well, wish you guys luck in your project. If you need anything else, just reach out.
That wraps up episode 5 of our interview with Officer Robinson. We have been working so hard this past school year to solve his Kim's case, and it's coming to an end very soon. We hope in the next episode we can finally bring her and the others to justice.
Underestimated. Michigan Missing Angels was researched, written, and produced by Brendan, Tegan, McKenna, and Emery. Intro music by Haley. All other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Tegan. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping us fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.